What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
You know what? In a way, it's kind of like Christmas Eve. Because if you look at the start of baseball in St. Louis as Christmas, that makes tonight Christmas Eve. So make sure you go to bed, go to sleep. We don't want Ollie Marmol to catch you awake when he comes by your house to deliver baseball goodies in anticipation of tomorrow's opening day. I'm pumped for this. I'm going to be at Kegs and Eggs tomorrow. I actually gave away my tickets for tomorrow to a client, and it's a darn good client, I will tell you that. So Brad Young in with you this evening. Hope you're having a great evening. And I wanted to mention this story, and I want to get Matt Pajeski's take on it, because I saw today that, and I'm a sucker for a good museum, I really am, but there's a museum in Brooklyn that's opened last week, and it's called the Museum of Failure. That's what it's called, the Museum of Failure. And this museum has all of these exhibits of and honoring people, products, and ideas that simply didn't make it. And here's a couple of examples. Number one is the DeLorean. And of course, as soon as I mentioned DeLorean, it's legendary as being a time machine, of course, but as a car, not so much. It was underpowered. It was overexpensive. It was way too expensive. I don't think the car, and that's what made me laugh when I was watching Back to the Future, and they would say it's going to go 88 miles an hour. I don't think the DeLorean could really go 88 miles per hour, which is maybe why the real DeLorean can't actually breach the space-time continuum, because the darn thing won't go 88 miles an hour, not even downhill. Coke 2. Remember Coke 2? No, because nobody bought it. And it quickly got shifted away and hidden away because nobody bought it. Nobody wanted Coke 2. The Nokia phones. I don't remember if you remember the cell phone, but this Nokia phone looked like a game display where you would hold it with both hands and it looked like you were playing a video game, but it was really a cell phone. Oh, it was garbage. It's there. My favorite, though, is fat-free Pringles with Olestra. Now, what they didn't tell you with the fat-free Pringles is if you ate them, it would cause, how do I put this, enormous gastrointestinal distress. I'll put it that way. Because we want to keep the show clean, in case the kids are up listening. Gastrointestinal distress. That's how it was fat-free, because it, well, colon blow comes to mind. But that's as far as I'm going to go on describing fat-free Pringles. So I wanted to ask Matt Pajeski. Matt, if you were making a contribution to the Museum of Failure, what would you put in that museum?
I would find some way to incorporate the computer system that Southwest Airlines uses to get their flights into the museum.
Yeah. There was some kind of a chip or a subroutine that some independent contractor messed with that shut down the whole system. But yeah, that computer module that needs to be in the Museum of Failure.
I feel like I can see the user interface now, just so like it's based from the 90s, and it's got the old AOL startup sounds. You know, when you try to dial up the program, that's just what I'm imagining it would look like.
That is perfect. Anything else come to mind, or is that your?
I'll say topical, the Silicon Valley Bank, somehow to include that in the into the museum.
SVB.
Mm-hmm. Another one for me is Apple Maps. The map app on my phone, it for some reason just never seems to get me there. Most of the time it works, but to me it's a failure where
really
if I'm having to turn around and go backwards and go the way I came from just to get to a restaurant that you know I haven't heard of, it seems to fail me more often than it doesn't.
I always like whenever I'm using a map program and it says make an illegal U-turn. Yeah. You know, that's when you know it's been taking you the wrong direction.
Exactly. That's why
Apple Maps.
Now a Google Maps user myself.
There you go. Well, I've got a couple. One is the Ford Pinto.
Okay.
Now, I don't know, you're too young to even know about the Ford Pinto.
Correct.
But the Ford Pinto came out in 1971. And this is a classic story because the way the Pinto was designed, the way they put the gas tank in the rear of the vehicle, right behind the rear bumper. So if the car was involved in a rear-end collision, the car exploded is what happened. Okay. So when it was brought to Ford's attention, Mr. Ford, we've got a problem with the Ford Pinto. If it's in a rear-end collision, the thing explodes. And I'm not making this up. We learned about this in law school, that what happened was that the litigation department at Ford had a calculation of what it would cost to redesign the car. And then they did an estimation on what the litigation would cost. And they decided that the litigation was cheaper than the redesign of the vehicle. So they left it.
Oh, my gosh.
And people were dying in Ford Pintos. They were exploding on the highway. There were class action lawsuits. I mean, it's basically like the Hindenburg on wheels here with the Ford Pinto.
So Ford essentially put a value on its customers' lives. Is that what? That's
yes.
What, that's what they said.
They said it's cheaper to deal with the litigation than it is to fix the problem.
Wow.
Okay? So I would put the Ford Pinto in there. The other thing that I would put in there would be a sign for Blockbuster Video. Now, here's why. Not the reason why you think, okay? But this is I just love this story. Because, you know, Blockbuster Video, when I was a kid, was just king, okay? It was big time. There were Blockbuster Videos everywhere. And I believe it was in the year 2000. Blockbuster had an opportunity to buy this new upstart company called Netflix.
I knew it.
And they had an opportunity to buy it for $50 million in the year 2000. And in 2018, Netflix's market value was $150 billion. I don't know what it is today. I didn't look it up. But it was $150 billion. And Blockbuster would be around today had they simply invested $50 million in Netflix, but they chose not to do it.
Have you heard that? There's speculation that Blockbuster may be returning in some fashion. Not the store, but something.
I saw that.
Dave Glover Show was talking about it, too.
And what I saw was apparently if you go to blockbustervideo.com or whatever their website is, there's some sort of a innocuous, cryptic message that something's coming soon. I don't know. That's as far as I know, that's all we know.
It says the website right now on blockbuster.com says, we are working on rewinding your movie.
That's what it is. So what does that mean?
So at least from the Dave Glover Show, they're saying that there's no way they're actually bringing back the store because it would be moot at this point. But I think Rachel Zimmerman said that she thinks Blockbuster might be like cashing in on their own streaming service. They might try to find a way to incorporate their own, you know, selection of movies and have their own streaming service. Mm-hmm. But if that's true, then I don't know. That's just the umpteenth streaming service, and it's going to probably fail amongst all the other ones, I would imagine.
Yeah, do we really need another streaming service? I'm paying for too many now.
Exactly.
I don't think I need another one. But yeah, I would put that in there. And there's an IT worker. Well, I'm going to close on this. IT worker, his name is James Howell. You've never heard of him. But in 2013, he had a hard drive on his computer that happened to have 7,500 Bitcoin in 2013. Now, at the time, it was only worth $1,000. But when he was working on his computer, he accidentally threw away the hard drive that had 7,500 Bitcoin on it. It was only worth $1,000, so he didn't care. today, that much Bitcoin is worth $50 million. Ugh. And he threw the hard drive in the trash. To me, that, my friends, is the definition of failure. If you could put something in the museum of failure, what would it be? What person, what product, what concept would you put in the museum of failure if you had one entry to submit? 314-436-7900. I would love to hear your comment. In fact, I've already got a text. Someone texted in and said they would put in there the entire Biden administration. And I think you could make a pretty good argument for that. But what would you put in there? Text or call. Love to hear from you. Brad Young, Camo X. Stick around.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in with you this evening until 10. What would you put in the Museum of Failure? My hope is you're not saying this guy that's on Camo X right now. Don't say that. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to be in the Museum of Failure. So, but what would you put in there? 314-436-7900. Hey, Grant's been holding through the break. Grant, welcome to Camo X.
Hi. I would put Ronald Wayne.
Ronald Wayne. And now, I know that name, but tell us, who is Ronald Wayne?
In 1976, he sold his 10% share of Apple computers back to Wozniak and Jobs for
$800. $800 for his 10% share in Apple. Now, any idea how much Apple stock is worth today?
I think it was estimated it'd be worth $95 billion right now.
Yeah, I think the stock price, I didn't Google it recently, but I know at one point in the last year, Apple stock had a $1 trillion valuation. So if he would have owned 10%, that's $100 billion. He sold it for $800. Wow. This should be called the Ronald Wayne Museum of Failure. He shouldn't just be an exhibit. It should be named after him.
That's a good call.
Yeah. Hey, Grant, great suggestion, sir. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Thank you. James, what would you put in the Museum of Failure?
When Jack in the Box changed the name to Monterey Jack.
Oh, I remember that. That didn't work very well, did it?
No, that was a disaster. I mean, they got rid of Jack the whole nine yards.
Yeah, how long was it Monterey Jack? Because I remember when that switchover happened, but I recall, James, that didn't last very long, did it?
No, not even 6 months. Somebody out there knows more than me, but yeah, it was the dumbest thing ever. And I never understood that.
Well,
you're changing an American icon.
You know what's funny? Have you ever worked with any consultants, James?
No. I retired from Boeing. I just work on planes.
Okay. Oh, I love planes. You know what? You and I could completely geek out talking about the multiple designs of the F-15. I know the ins and outs of the MQ-25. Oh, I could completely have a great conversation with you, James, about that. But
my claim to fame is I worked on every one of those planes.
Oh, you did?
That was in the new Top Gun.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't think you worked. If you look at the new Top Gun, now, number one, James, let's be honest, you did not work on a Mach 10 hypersonic vehicle.
No, I work on the 18.
I know. And then, you know, my favorite laughable scene in that Top Gun movie, James, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when Tom Cruise goes into the country purported to be Iran, And of course, they never said that, but and they steal an F-14, an old F-14 Tomcat that was already fueled and ready to go. It would take hours to get an aircraft ready to fly, wouldn't it?
True, yes. He needs a starter. He doesn't have an APU, yes.
No, and so whenever he jumps in the plane and basically pushes a starter, and then they take off with like 30 seconds of prep, I said, come on. You could never do that.
Not happening.
Not happening. Well, James, I'm going to remember that Monterey Jack should be in the hall, or rather the Museum of Failure. Thanks so much for listening.
Two more, the pea shooters and the clackers.
The clacker. Tell us about this, because I'm not familiar with the clacker.
Those two pieces of glass with a piece of string that you went up and down and clacked. Remember that?
No, I don't remember that, but correct me if I'm wrong. Did you say they had two pieces of glass that people clacked together?
Yeah, you had a piece of string, okay, and each end was a piece of glass or a really hard plastic, and it had a little ring in the middle of it, and you went up and down, and it clacked.
But if it was glass, wouldn't it just break?
After a while, they did. They shattered. Some of your callers will chime in, because that was a big thing in the 70s. Like I said, I'm 61.
Well, I mean, I was in the 70s. I mean, I was eating Oreos and watching Scooby-Doo in the 70s. But, yeah. I mean, I was around in the 70s, but I don't remember the clacker. I guess because my parents didn't want me playing with glass that shatters. Maybe that was it. Thanks, James. Yeah, that
you're welcome.
Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. Yeah, that reminds me of the old Saturday Night Live skit where Dan Aykroyd was playing a shiesty game developer, and one of them was called Bag of Glass. And have you ever seen that, Matt? Have you ever seen that skit?
Don't forget Switchblade Johnny.
Johnny Switchblade and the Bag of Glass. Yeah, exactly. That's what the clacker absolutely sounds like to me. Well, there's lots of, I've got some more folks who have been texting in. One person texted in about the car that Ralph Nader made a big deal about because it didn't have seat belts. They would put that in there. And then somebody else texted in the DeLorean. Yeah, we talked about the DeLorean. That car was truly, truly a failure. And again, it only lives because of the Back to the Future movies. Hey, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about another failure, and that's going to be the St. Louis lawsuit that's filed this week against Kia. St. Louis files a lawsuit against Kia. I'm going to break down the legalities of the lawsuit, where I think this is going, and why I think it's a mistake. Brad Young at your service this evening on Camo X. We'll be right back. Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young here with you this evening. And in the last segment, we were talking about the Museum of Failure. I'm sorry I didn't mention this, but we had someone text in that said two things. Number one, the Edsel. Number two, Kim Gardner. And I really can't top that. That's classic. 314-436-7900. We've got open phone lines and certainly open text lines. I wanted to break down this lawsuit. As you know, the city of St. Louis this week filed a lawsuit against Kia. And the basis for the lawsuit is essentially this. We all know that Kias at this point are far easier to steal than second base. So they're so easy, in fact, that there are YouTube videos on how to do it. I saw one YouTube video that said all you need is a USB cable and a screwdriver, and you can steal a Kia and a Hyundai. So I'm not advocating doing that, mind you. Keep that in mind, not advocating it. So because of the thousands of cars that have been stolen in the city, basically the city sued Kia saying it's your fault that all of these cars are being stolen in the city of St. Louis because you made it too easy for people to steal cars. Now, first of all, St. Louis isn't the first city to do this. In the past 6 months, I think, Cleveland has done this, Columbus, Ohio, Milwaukee, San Diego, even Seattle. So you've got all of these urban centers who've all experienced this enormous exponential increase in car thefts, and they're primarily focused on Kias and Hyundais. Why? Kids are stealing the cars, they go joyriding, then they abandon the cars, and then they shoot stupid videos of themselves doing stupid things with the cars, a lot of times crashing them. So these aren't not exactly Mensa candidates who are stealing these cars. So instead of blaming the individuals who are stealing the cars, the city decides to blame the manufacturer of those cars. And first of all, it seems like, isn't this type of litigation conceptually, isn't it very similar to the litigation against gun manufacturers, where people say, you know, it's the people who are using your product improperly, and because people are using your product improperly, it's your fault. Now, think about all of the products that you buy that have disclaimers, wonderfully written disclaimers, written by, of course, genius attorneys. So you've seen all of those. My favorite of all time, I will chase a rabbit here, my favorite disclaimer of all time, favorite beyond any other disclaimer. This was probably 20 years ago. I'm at my brother-in-law's house. I'm at my sister-in-law's house for Halloween. And their son, who at the time was like 10, maybe 12, he was putting on a Batman costume. And when he put on the Batman costume, he took it out of a box. So I grabbed the box. I'm looking at the box. And right on the front of the box, in big, bold letters, it said, "Warning, cape does not enable user to fly." Now, I thought about that for a moment, and two things immediately came to mind. First of all, that disclaimer is on the box because some darn fool actually tried to fly with it, probably sued the company, and so then they put on the disclaimer that says, "Hey, moron, this cape does not enable you to fly." So they had to put it on there because somebody jumped off the roof of their garage with a Batman cape and probably broke the collarbone. Second thing that occurred to me was this. Whoever wrote that knows nothing about Batman because Batman can't fly anyway. He can't fly. He falls with style, as they said in Toy Story, but Batman doesn't fly. Come on. So how could you even put that on the box? Now, if it were a Superman cape, okay, Superman flies. But Batman doesn't even fly, for goodness sakes. But yet, you know, it doesn't matter. We got to put the disclaimer on there. So the city of St. Louis, as I said, is more interested in blaming the manufacturer of the product than blaming the people who are misusing the product by stealing the cars. But secondly, that's more of a policy perspective. Secondly, I've read through the complaint, the actual complaint that was filed by the attorneys for the city of St. Louis, 18 pages long. And if you want a copy of it, send me an email. I'll be happy to send it to you. BYoung@harrisdowell.com. BYoung@harrisdowell.com. HARRIS as in Sam, D as in David, OWELL.com. The lawsuit essentially alleges that there are regulations in place that require cars, and I'm reading directly from the pleadings here, require vehicle manufacturers to implement minimum theft protection standards. And they're right. That is under the Code of Federal Regulations. I've looked it up myself today. But it doesn't define what those minimum theft protection standards are. And if you look at the Motor Vehicle Theft Law Enforcement Act from 1984, it makes anti-theft devices as being basically, it's at the discretion of the car manufacturer as to what those anti-theft devices are. So the argument here is that the makers of Kia and Hyundai cars had a duty. They had a duty to use every single anti-theft device possible, including gadgets on the cars that would make them inoperable in the absence of a key fob chip. But there is no federal regulation that requires that. There is no federal law that requires any such anti-theft device. And if you look at it from a litigation perspective, anytime a lawsuit is filed, there are essentially four elements that the plaintiff has to prove. Just four in most lawsuits. And that is, number one, the defendant had a legal duty to do something. Let's look at your run-of-the-mill car crash case, okay? If you're the defendant, you have a legal duty to operate your car safely. So if you drink a bottle of Jack Daniels and you get out on the road, then you have breached that duty because you're no longer operating the car safely. And then the second duty is that the defendant breached that duty. Thirdly, that the plaintiff suffered an injury. And fourth, that the injury is related and directly causally related to the defendant's breach of their duty. But let's get back to point number one. I'm not trying to go into contract law or tort law 101 here. What I'm trying to do is to demonstrate that if there is no legal requirement for car manufacturers to implement a key fob anti-theft device, then the city cannot prove that Kia had a duty to install those. They may have had a moral responsibility to do it. They maybe should have done it. But keep in mind, people who buy Kias, they buy them because they're cheap. Okay? That's the reason. I'm not denigrating anyone for buying a Kia, but that's the primary reason. Nobody goes to the car dealership and says, you know what? The best car on the market today is a Kia. Nobody says that. They buy them because they're inexpensive and at least perceived to be quality cars at a low price. So the way the car manufacturers deliver that low price is to make everything an option. So if you wanted to buy a Kia with a key fob anti-theft device, that was an option that you could do. But apparently everyone who's getting their Kias stolen chose not to do that. Why? Because it makes the car cheaper. But there's no legal duty to make those cars as theft-proof as industry standards can make them be. So there's no duty. So legally speaking, I don't know how the plaintiffs for the city of St. Louis, the attorneys for the city, I don't understand or comprehend how they're going to get past that very first element when it comes to proving that Kia had a duty to make these cars basically Fort Knox impenetrable. I don't know how they do that. And that litigation, as it moves on, obviously we'll be discussing it. But there's two other interesting angles that I want to mention to you. Number one, I heard people talking about, well, it's filed in the city, so you're going to have a city jury. Well, it's really filed in federal court. Why is that a difference? Number one, federal judges are much less tolerant of, shall I say, shenanigans than our state court judges. And I speak from experience. But secondly, and I think more importantly, the jury pool here isn't the city of St. Louis. It includes the city. But for the federal courts, it goes up to, I think, Hannibal. It goes down to somewhere.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from.
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young here with you this evening. And in the last segment, we were talking about the Museum of Failure. I'm sorry I didn't mention this, but we had someone text in that said two things. Number one, the Edsel. Number two, Kim Gardner. And I really can't top that. That's classic. 314-436-7900. We've got open phone lines and certainly open text lines. I wanted to break down this lawsuit. As you know, the city of St. Louis this week filed a lawsuit against Kia. And the basis for the lawsuit is essentially this. We all know that Kias at this point are far easier to steal than second base. So they're so easy, in fact, that there are YouTube videos on how to do it. I saw one YouTube video that said all you need is a USB cable and a screwdriver, and you can steal a Kia and a Hyundai. So I'm not advocating doing that, mind you. Keep that in mind, not advocating it. So because of the thousands of cars that have been stolen in the city, basically the city sued Kia saying it's your fault that all of these cars are being stolen in the city of St. Louis because you made it too easy for people to steal cars. Now, first of all, St. Louis isn't the first city to do this. In the past 6 months, I think, Cleveland has done this, Columbus, Ohio, Milwaukee, San Diego, even Seattle. So you've got all of these urban centers who've all experienced this enormous exponential increase in car thefts, and they're primarily focused on Kias and Hyundais. Why? Kids are stealing the cars, they go joyriding, then they abandon the cars, and then they shoot stupid videos of themselves doing stupid things with the cars, a lot of times crashing them. So these aren't not exactly Mensa candidates who are stealing these cars. So instead of blaming the individuals who are stealing the cars, the city decides to blame the manufacturer of those cars. And first of all, it seems like, isn't this type of litigation conceptually, isn't it very similar to the litigation against gun manufacturers, where people say, you know, it's the people who are using your product improperly, and because people are using your product improperly, it's your fault. Now, think about all of the products that you buy that have disclaimers, wonderfully written disclaimers, written by, of course, genius attorneys. So you've seen all of those. My favorite of all time, I will chase a rabbit here, my favorite disclaimer of all time, favorite beyond any other disclaimer. This was probably 20 years ago. I'm at my brother-in-law's house. I'm at my sister-in-law's house for Halloween. And their son, who at the time was like 10, maybe 12, he was putting on a Batman costume. And when he put on the Batman costume, he took it out of a box. So I grabbed the box. I'm looking at the box. And right on the front of the box, in big, bold letters, it said, "Warning, cape does not enable user to fly." Now, I thought about that for a moment, and two things immediately came to mind. First of all, that disclaimer is on the box because some darn fool actually tried to fly with it, probably sued the company, and so then they put on the disclaimer that says, "Hey, moron, this cape does not enable you to fly." So they had to put it on there because somebody jumped off the roof of their garage with a Batman cape and probably broke the collarbone. Second thing that occurred to me was this. Whoever wrote that knows nothing about Batman because Batman can't fly anyway. He can't fly. He falls with style, as they said in Toy Story, but Batman doesn't fly. Come on. So how could you even put that on the box? Now, if it were a Superman cape, okay, Superman flies. But Batman doesn't even fly, for goodness sakes. But yet, you know, it doesn't matter. We got to put the disclaimer on there. So the city of St. Louis, as I said, is more interested in blaming the manufacturer of the product than blaming the people who are misusing the product by stealing the cars. But secondly, that's more of a policy perspective. Secondly, I've read through the complaint, the actual complaint that was filed by the attorneys for the city of St. Louis, 18 pages long. And if you want a copy of it, send me an email. I'll be happy to send it to you. BYoung@harrisdowell.com. BYoung@harrisdowell.com. HARRIS as in Sam, D as in David, OWELL.com. The lawsuit essentially alleges that there are regulations in place that require cars, and I'm reading directly from the pleadings here, require vehicle manufacturers to implement minimum theft protection standards. And they're right. That is under the Code of Federal Regulations. I've looked it up myself today. But it doesn't define what those minimum theft protection standards are. And if you look at the Motor Vehicle Theft Law Enforcement Act from 1984, it makes anti-theft devices as being basically, it's at the discretion of the car manufacturer as to what those anti-theft devices are. So the argument here is that the makers of Kia and Hyundai cars had a duty. They had a duty to use every single anti-theft device possible, including gadgets on the cars that would make them inoperable in the absence of a key fob chip. But there is no federal regulation that requires that. There is no federal law that requires any such anti-theft device. And if you look at it from a litigation perspective, anytime a lawsuit is filed, there are essentially four elements that the plaintiff has to prove, just four, in most lawsuits. And that is, number one, the defendant had a legal duty to do something. Let's look at your run-of-the-mill car crash case, okay? If you're the defendant, you have a legal duty to operate your car safely. So if you drink a bottle of Jack Daniels and you get out on the road, then you have breached that duty because you're no longer operating the car safely. And then the second duty is that the defendant breached that duty. Thirdly, that the plaintiff suffered an injury. And fourth, that the injury is related and directly causally related to the defendant's breach of their duty. But let's get back to point number one. I'm not trying to go into contract law or tort law 101 here. What I'm trying to do is to demonstrate that if there is no legal requirement for car manufacturers to implement a key fob anti-theft device, then the city cannot prove that Kia had a duty to install those. They may have had a moral responsibility to do it. They maybe should have done it. But keep in mind, people who buy Kias, they buy them because they're cheap. Okay, that's the reason. I'm not denigrating anyone for buying a Kia, but that's the primary reason. Nobody goes to the car dealership and says, you know what? The best car on the market today is a Kia. Nobody says that. They buy them because they're inexpensive and at least perceived to be quality cars at a low price. So the way the car manufacturers deliver that low price is to make everything an option. So if you wanted to buy a Kia with a key fob anti-theft device, that was an option that you could do. But apparently everyone who's getting their Kias stolen chose not to do that. Why? Because it makes the car cheaper. But there's no legal duty to make those cars as theft-proof as industry standards can make them be. So there's no duty. So legally speaking, I don't know how the plaintiffs for the city of St. Louis, the attorneys for the city, I don't understand or comprehend how they're going to get past that very first element when it comes to proving that Kia had a duty to make these cars basically Fort Knox impenetrable. I don't know how they do that. And that litigation, as it moves on, obviously we'll be discussing it. But there's two other interesting angles that I want to mention to you. Number one, I heard people talking about, well, it's filed in the city, so you're going to have a city jury. Well, it's really filed in federal court. Why is that a difference? Number one, federal judges are much less tolerant of, shall I say, shenanigans than are state court judges. And I speak from experience. But secondly, and I think more importantly, the jury pool here isn't the city of St. Louis. It includes the city. But for the federal courts, it goes up to, I think, Hannibal. It goes down to somewhere close to Cape Girardeau. So you've got a very large jury pool that includes people other than the citizens of the city of St. Louis. So when you look at it from that perspective, it's going to be a difficult litigation for the city to pursue. But my last comment on this is the following. Think about this for a moment. Think about who is stealing the cars. Juveniles in the city of St. Louis are stealing these cars. Now, presumably, some of those individuals, not all, certainly not all, but at least statistically speaking, if they live in the city of St. Louis, there's probably at least some portion of the criminals who are stealing these cars are African American. Now, we know that because of some of the videos that we've seen online. So if the city does win money from Kia, or if they settle this case and receive money from Kia because of this lawsuit, and if Mayor Tashara Jones decides to put that money towards reparations, consider that the people who were stealing the cars could actually receive money from the city in exchange for their theft of the vehicles in the first place. Wrap your head around that for a moment and consider what those ramifications might be. Hey, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back for our final segment here on Camo X at your service, 314-436-7900 on The Voice of St. Louis, Camo X. You know, not only is the Camo X audience the smartest audience in radio, you guys are also pretty funny. Because I've gotten many texts this evening that literally, unlike the LOL, literally made me laugh out loud. So thank you very much for the texts that you've had coming in this evening. Hey, we've only got a few minutes left here on the show, but I wanted to mention this because I think this is an interesting topic. And I'll dive into this in detail a little bit here before the show's over. But Amazon is reportedly considering the purchase of AMC Entertainment. So we all know Jeff Bezos, one of the top three richest people on the planet, depending on when you're counting. And they're looking at buying AMC. So but before I dive into this, I think John's been holding, wants to talk about Kia. Hey, John, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you doing tonight, Brad?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Oh, pretty good. I've been listening to the show here for a couple of hours here.
Good, so. Thank you.
Good stuff.
Good. What's on your mind?
Hey, just wanted to let you know, kind of maybe tongue-in-cheek, one of the easiest ways to get somebody to stop stealing cars nowadays is put a stick shift in them.
No kidding.
Nobody knows how to drive a stick.
No, so. Nobody knows how to drive a stick. No. I used to drive a stick, but you're right. You just don't see them anymore, do you?
No, we had a couple cars. I work at a dealership, and they tried to steal four cars off of our lot, and they got two of them, a couple Chargers, and there was another Charger that the battery was dead on, and then there was a Challenger, but it was a stick shift, and apparently nobody knew how to drive that one. So.
Well, that's that might be the best anti-theft device on the market, having a stick shift.
Yes. So
very good,
anyhow,
John.
Hey, just want to kind of say that tongue-in-cheek. I enjoy your show, and I'm going, just as soon as I get off the phone, I'm going to turn the radio back on.
All right, John. Hey, thanks for listening. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
Good night.
Have a great evening.
Yeah, and we've gotten some more just in the last few minutes, some fantastic texts. So I'll try to respond to those during the break, but thank you very much. But I wanted to talk about this because if Amazon buys AMC, which AMC, by the way, is the world's largest chain of movie theaters. I looked it up. There's over 600 theaters in the United States. Or actually, it's in North America, which includes, obviously, the Canada and Central America, at least parts of Central America. So my point being is that they've got the money to buy this, and movie theaters are struggling right now. But what instantly came to my mind is the movie industry, the brick and mortar movie industry has been struggling. That's no secret. Would it help if the power and, more importantly, the wallet of Jeff Bezos comes in to buy movie theaters. Would that make you more inclined to go see a movie or less inclined? And they look at it from an interesting perspective. Bezos's perspective is that he could use movies that are being shown to promote Amazon products or Amazon only streaming movies. So you go see the latest Marvel movie, and before the Marvel movie comes out, you've got to see Amazon Prime ads. And he could do that if they own AMC. But here's instantly what I thought of. And this is long before I was alive, but back in the 20s and the 30s and even into the 40s, movie production companies like Paramount, they actually owned theaters. But that was called an antitrust violation. What's an antitrust violation? Antitrust is when a company controls every part of the process. So, for example, if you own the oil wells, if you drill the oil, and then you sell the oil at gas stations, and then you price the oil, at that point, you've controlled every part of the process. You own it. It's a monopoly. Just like in the game Monopoly, if you own all the colors, then you've created a monopoly. And what happens? The price goes up. So the government has antitrust laws that prevent that from happening. So the U.S. government sued Paramount Pictures in 1948 on an antitrust violation, saying you make the movies, you show the movies. The problem is if you own the theater, you could refuse to show movies from MGM. You could refuse to show movies from Sony or any other company. If Paramount owns the movie theaters, you can squeeze out everybody else. And so there was a restriction put into place by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1948 that prevented movie production companies from owning theaters. Now, we've all benefited from this. How? Well, we've benefited from it because after that happened, I should say before that happened, you never saw any foreign-made movies. There were no independent movies. There were no independent films. Certainly nothing foreign-made. But once the movie production companies were barred from owning movie theaters, all of a sudden now the market opened up to independents, movies, to foreign films, and so forth. But I just think it's interesting that this decree stayed in place from 1948 all the way until 2019. So just 4 years ago, that Justice Department decree was still in place. But they did away with that decree in 2019. Why? Because they thought nobody's going to see movies anymore. Everybody's streaming. It's no longer a problem. So now, because of something that happened in 1948 that was done away with in 2019, Jeff Bezos may now be buying the AMC theater that you go to every weekend. Well, it's all how interesting right. Is that? Hey, glad you stayed around with us tonight. Glad you could stay up late here on Camo X. I'll be here next Wednesday night. After that, I'm not really sure how often I'll be here because of baseball season, but I'll tell you what, coming up at 10 o'clock is the best of Dave Glover. You're going to want to stick around for that right here on Camo X. You know, Not only is the Camo X audience the smartest audience in radio, you guys are also pretty funny because I've gotten many texts this evening that literally, unlike the LOL, literally made me laugh out loud. So thank you very much for the texts that you've had coming in this evening. Hey, we've only got a few minutes left here on the show, but I wanted to mention this because I think this is an interesting topic. And I'll dive into this in detail a little bit here before the show's over. But Amazon is reportedly considering the purchase of AMC Entertainment. So we all know Jeff Bezos, one of the top three richest people on the planet, depending on when you're counting. And they're looking at buying AMC. So, but before I dive into this, I think John's been holding, wants to talk about Kia. Hey, John, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you doing tonight, Brad?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Oh, pretty good. I've been listening to the show here for a couple hours here.
Good.
So.
Thank you.
Good stuff.
Good. What's on your mind?
Hey, just wanted to let you know, kind of maybe tongue-in-cheek, one of the easiest ways to get somebody to stop stealing cars nowadays is put a stick shift in them.
No kidding.
Nobody knows how to drive a stick.
No, so. Nobody knows how to drive a stick. No. I used to drive a stick, but you're right. You just don't see them anymore, do you?
No, we had a couple cars. I work at a dealership, and they tried to steal four cars off of our lot, and they got two of them, a couple Chargers, and there was another Charger that the battery was dead on, and then there was a Challenger, but it was a stick shift, and apparently nobody knew how to drive that one. So.
Well, that's that might be the best anti-theft device on the market, having a stick shift.
Yes. So
very good,
anyhow,
John.
Hey. Just want to kind of say that tongue-in-cheek, I enjoy your show, and I'm going, just as soon as I get off the phone, I'm going to turn the radio back on.
All right, John. Hey, thanks for listening. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
Good night.
Have a great evening.
Yeah, and we've got some more, just in the last few minutes, some fantastic texts, so I'll try to respond to those during the break, but thank you very much. But I wanted to talk about this, because if Amazon buys AMC, which AMC, by the way, is the world's largest chain of movie theaters. I looked it up. There's over 600 theaters in the United States. Or actually, it's in North America, which includes, obviously, the Canada and Central America, at least parts of Central America. So my point being is that they've got the money to buy this, and movie theaters are struggling right now. But what instantly came to my mind is the movie industry, the brick and mortar movie industry, has been struggling. It's no secret. Would it help if the power, and more importantly, the wallet of Jeff Bezos comes in to buy movie theaters? Would that make you more inclined to go see a movie or less inclined? And they look at it from an interesting perspective. Bezos's perspective is that he could use movies that are being shown to promote Amazon products or Amazon only streaming movies. So you go see the latest Marvel movie, and before the Marvel movie comes out, you've got to see Amazon Prime ads. And he could do that if they own AMC. But here's instantly what I thought of. And this is long before I was alive, but back in the 20s and the 30s and even into the 40s, movie production companies like Paramount, they actually own theaters. But that was called an antitrust violation. What's an antitrust violation? Antitrust is when a company controls every part of the process. So, for example, if you own the oil wells, if you drill the oil, and then you sell the oil at gas stations, and then you price the oil, at that point, you've controlled every part of the process. You own it. It's a monopoly. Just like in the game Monopoly, if you own all the colors, then you've created a monopoly. And what happens? The price goes up. So the government has antitrust laws that prevent that from happening. So the U.S. government sued Paramount Pictures in 1948 on an antitrust violation, saying you make the movies, you show the movies. The problem is, if you own the theater, you could refuse to show movies from MGM. You could refuse to show movies from Sony or any other company. If Paramount owns the movie theaters, you can squeeze out everybody else. And so there was a restriction put into place by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1948 that prevented movie production companies from owning theaters. Now, we've all benefited from this. How? Well, we've benefited from it because after that happened, I should say before that happened, you never saw any foreign-made movies. There were no independent movies. There were no independent films. Certainly nothing foreign-made. But once the movie production companies were barred from owning movie theaters, all of a sudden now the market opened up to independents, movies, to foreign films, and so forth. But I just think it's interesting that this decree stayed in place from 1948 all the way until 2019. So just 4 years ago, that Justice Department decree was still in place, but they did away with that decree in 2019. Why? Because they thought nobody's going to see movies anymore. Everybody's streaming. It's no longer a problem. So now, because of something that happened in 1948 that was done away with in 2019, Jeff Bezos may now be buying the AMC theater that you go to every weekend. Well, it's all how interesting right. is that? Hey, glad you stayed around with us tonight. Glad you could stay up late here on Camo X. I'll be here next Wednesday night. After that, I'm not really sure how often I'll be here because of baseball season, but I'll tell you what, coming up at 10 o'clock is the best of Dave Glover. You're going to want to stick around for that right here on Camo X.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.